Welcome to the Echo Chamber Club podcast. Welcome. I'm Alice Thwaite, and I'm the founder and editor of the Echo Chamber Club. The Echo Chamber Club is a weekly newsletter to help our subscribers who we think have liberal or progressive beliefs to understand different points of view. So if we fully understand a strong version of the opposing viewpoint, then we can steel man our own political opinions. This is the beginning of a new series where we speak to key thinkers, where we try and understand what they believe a new Western politics could look like from a centrist point of view. So today I'm chatting to Royfield Brown. Royfield runs the Mid-Atlantic Show, a podcast which discusses British and American politics, as well as being a journalist who writes for The New Democracy, The Guardian, The Huffington Post, and who produces the City Metric podcast for The New Statesman. So, Royfield, let's start by talking about you. How would you characterise your core political beliefs?
I think I slightly wander all over the left of the political spectrum. But I must admit, in the last, maybe in the last 2 years, I've probably come a little bit more hard left. But I see myself much more as pragmatic. I don't, for example, I don't have a problem dealing with One Nation Tories, and I don't demonise the right at all. So I think emotionally, I'm probably more soft left than I'd realise, though in my head I'm more far left, if that makes any form of sense.
Sure, yeah. I think quite a lot of our subscribers would agree with you on that point. But to go into a bit more detail, what kind of policies do you believe, what kind of the core values are of someone who would describe themselves as on the left but who empathises with One Nation Tories? Are there any examples that you could give there?
It's absolutely would be tolerance. And if anything underlines what I believe in, it's that. It's to be tolerant. And we're living in times where tolerance is at least certain people who have fears about cultural identity being swamped, being taken away, are increasingly less tolerant about the fears of their identity being lost. So for me, at the core, it's all about tolerance. I suppose one area where I would disagree with the One Nation Tory when it comes to policy would be grammar schools. Instinctively, I'm not necessarily against grammar schools per se, but I believe that selective schooling per se is going to is potentially a time bomb underneath Britain, and definitely a Britain where there are different people of different creeds, colours, and races, and we are self-segregating through schooling. So tolerance and maybe around schooling would be one kind of clear policy difference I'd have with a One Nation Tory.
So you kind of brought create your political beliefs around what social policy should be like, so what our society should be like, and that you kind of frame that in terms of equality and also, well, as you said, tolerance. I can't think of a better word than that. Is that kind of broadly where you stand, or do you have other kind of more economic point of views around what politics should do for its citizens?
Well, kind of core to my beliefs, something I've just kind of developed in the last, let's say, 5 years or so, would be the belief that we are, I believe, living in the end of the nation state. And I do believe that cities and regions really are the way forward. So viewed from that prism, schools and local politics are even more kind of important. And, you know, the maxim is that all politics is local anyway. And that's, I think, incredibly true. And if you look at let's say London, I would argue that London has more in common with New York than it does have with my hometown of Birmingham, though London happens to be within the same nation state as Birmingham. And then if we look at truly the things which kind of excite voters and which voters can understand, it's one of the reasons why the Brexit vote went the way that it did, is because you say to people, immigrants and people who are different, and they are coming in and taking your jobs, and people kind of get that because that is local to them. You talk to people about the EU and it's much more kind of nebulous, and people say, well, it doesn't really matter, and they can't really kind of understand it. And it's the fact that on the one level you have an economic club which doesn't impact on people's real lives, or let's say NATO, which would be a military pact. However, the fact that the corner shop is now called a Polski Schloppy or Schleppy, you know, what people get that, and it kind of hits them in their gut. So I just see the bonds that tie us together in terms of the nation state, but also decision making and politics on a real kind of human level, before we even talk about the economics of it, are kind of fraying our understanding of what it is to be English or German or American. And one of the things which I think will be characterized by the decade that we're in is the fact that identity absolutely is a multipolar thing. And it's something which somebody like me, who's black and English, I always call myself English before British, you know, immigrants have been able to understand this much more than indigenous white folks. And that this is the time when you now have people calling themselves white, working class, etc. And very clearly, I am, let's say, Scottish and British, and I am from I'm Northern and English, etc. That identity is becoming much more kind of confused and multipolar. And people, and I say confused in the traditional sense, but people kind of make sense out of it now. And that for me is kind of a key marker of my kind of political beliefs, is that we're all overlapping in terms of identity. But we're all actually, on the one hand, actually moving away from each other, but also conversely moving towards each other in terms of kind of global trends. And it's trying to understand those kind of tectonic plates, really. And I hope that made sense from the question.
It is, because identity politics is something that a lot of people have discussed post Brexit, and also post the Trump the American election, which voted for Trump, and it has come under a lot of attack, really by news sources as well, that you wouldn't expect it to come under attack. So I think I read a piece in the New York Times, The Guardian, I think even The Observer has been talking and questioning identity politics. Have your beliefs around what identity politics means changed at all in the past year, given what we've seen happen?
No, and it's something which I've been talking about for quite some time. And I remember the rise of the EDL, and I remember being sat round a very polite dinner party in Queen's Park. So it was, you know, it was full of people who are kind of were blindsided by the whole Trump phenomenon, Brexit, and so was I. Don't get me wrong, I'm not saying that I wasn't blindsided by it, but saying that if the EDL could curb obvious racist iconography to do with, you know, kind of aping 1940s Nazis, right? Mm. But actually, their leader was actually quite articulate and actually said some very interesting things which messed with our liberal sensibilities. So he would say Sikhs are my friends and Hindus are my friends, you know, and would be shaking hands with them, etc. He was very clear that this was an anti-Muslim thing, but also about white working class people standing up for their perceived position within this country. Though he would say, I embrace immigration. So traditionally, from a liberal lefty point of view, he kind of confused us, because he wasn't saying that all brown people were kind of bad. But then he would go on these marches, and these thugs who were completely and utterly out and out, no question about it, racists, would turn up. But him in isolation, I always thought he was a very fascinating figure, and he seems to backflip all over the place. From one minute he's friends with moderate Muslims and he'll go and visit imams, and the next minute he's railing against Islam as a religion. So I've kind of been at this position for quite some time, Alice, and I, back in 2012, wrote an article about British identity, but really the fact that black and brown Britain invariably is always England, you know, and use the prism of X Factor looking at this. So the Irish singers were always white, the Scottish singers are invariably always white, ditto the Welsh. But if you have a JLS or a Five After Midnight or a Leona Lewis, they're always English. And to understand that the English, the identity of being English is a much more complex one than it is for, let's say, the more Celtic nations of the United Kingdom. And in England, in so many ways, actually is very different. And then I've written articles about the fact that the Isle of Man School Board, School Board, about 3 years ago, failed and had to be subsumed by Hampshire. And there's no immigrant, there's no ethnic minorities there. This was a white, in inverted commas, working class county, of which they'd massively let down white working class kids. You know, the middle class parents had moved their kids away, and what was left was a rump, which was under finance, under resourced, and it had failed. Now, if that had happened in Tower Hamlets, there would have been the chattering classes, of which I'm part of, would have had a field day and would have said this is terrible and et cetera, et cetera. But the fact that it was the Isle of Wight, it kind of got forgotten by the mainstream press. So, right. This is, we live in confused and interesting kind of scary times, but I'm always kind of positive in terms of looking forward to the outcome, though.
So we'll link to those articles mm-hmm. on the same page so that everyone can take a look at them. But to circle back what you were saying about the EDL and about the fact that almost they say one thing and do another, and it's very difficult to understand or kind of interpret that from a kind of a liberal lefty point of view. Mm. How much have you thought about how we start to interpret these sort of things? Because I feel like there are two different sides to this right now. So one is that there is one side that just kind of screams racism because they observe, you know, these people on marches rather than listening to what they say, which has definitely been one interpretation. The other one has been kind of characterised as being normalising racism. So these articles that are talking about how can liberal lefties start to not call Trump racist, and it seems like we're at a real battle right now with with how we deal with these kind of characters and how we portray them and how we understand them. Is there a way that you've thought about that that we can begin to move past this question and start to deal with it better?
I think that we have to go back and actually look at class. And I've always thought, to truth be known, that class trumps race. And being black, black and English, British, whatever, if I look at, and I explain to people all day long, so if there is a black doctor in the UK, not always, but invariably, he's African, not West Indian, because there is a class component here. If you the majority of the Indian restaurants within the UK are actually owned by Pakistanis or Bangladeshis, and there's a reason for that. If racism in and of itself didn't have a class component, there'd be no. I couldn't say that black doctors in the UK are African as opposed to West Indian. But it's because the patterns of migration from Africa to the UK or the West Indies to the UK are markedly different. Different types of people came. So, yes, there is racism within the UK, but there is a class component which is absolutely a smothering blanket over the aspirations of many people, whether they're white, brown, black, etc. And we have to talk about that. You know, we live in a country whereby the vast majority of people who have the levers on power went to fundamentally two universities. And these are great, august institutions. And if people go to Oxford or Cambridge, there's nothing wrong with that. You know, I have many friends, and I know that you went to Cambridge too. So I'm not saying we should need to burn those institutions down. But what we need to do, though, is truly widen up those portals. So whereby if you happen to have gone to Newcastle University or a good red brick university, you can still, you know, end up being the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom, you know. And this is... And this is to do fundamentally to do with the way that the United Kingdom is structured, and it's we're a one city country. We are smothered by a whole set of class based levers, which actually don't mean that all Britons can actually rise to their greatest level. So you have cities that lie kind of dormant in the northwest and in the northeast of this country, kind of doing nothing. Fundamentally, let's talk about class, but let's not talk about it in a 1970s way, because the world has moved on. And just to bring this up to, you know, completely to modern day politics. And that's one of the reasons why Jeremy Corbyn isn't the right person to lead the Labour Party, because his understanding of class struggle, which though emotionally I completely get behind, but is completely still in the prism of the 1970s and the 1980s of miner strikes and stuff. And if you view the world that way, you cannot make any sense out of Brexit. You can't make any sense out of it. You know, the people's notion of class has completely moved on in the last 30, 40 years. However, we need to find a new way of talking about that aspiration or lack of aspiration or lack of opportunity, which doesn't in effect alienate people by talking about old notions of class struggle. It's still actually there. But we need new ways of looking at it. And we need to understand that just because somebody is working class, you can't, number one, they might not class themselves as working class. And then number two, we can't necessarily say that they are left of centre, because actually in many of those northern Lancashire towns, though those people are working class and traditionally would have voted for the Labour Party, they hold deeply socially conservative views. You know, and when you understand that, then all of a sudden Brexit and the rise of Trump, etc., makes much more sense.
So what's really interesting about what you said is that perhaps, you know, identity politics is still something that's it's required in today's society. Instead of saying what you know, where someone's from and what they are from an ethnic perspective, mm-hmm. We should actually be looking at more complex kind of markers, because as soon as you start talking about class, then there are so many different categories there, and it's very difficult to kind of pigeonhole someone into believing something.
Absolutely. And in terms of marketing, people stopped talking about ABC ones in about the early 1990s. But in politics, at least people on the left anyway, have still kept on doing that in terms of, you know, the working class and the middle class, but in very traditional terms. These people still do exist. There are still people that live in social housing. There's still people that living who have bought their own homes but are, you know, just managing. So maybe they're lower middle class, whatever, right? But we need a new lexicon around that. But it really, it's about economic advantage, disadvantage. And yes, we can then drill into it and say, well, then, yeah, inherently, if you are, you might say, if you are second generation Bangladeshi, you start from a further back point of disadvantage. And there are certain things unique to the Bangladeshi community, which, you know, with women coming over and not having English as a first language, et cetera, blah, 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 and whatever. But that conversation can't come first. We need to talk about working class people, working people, and have portrayed as working people, brown people and white people and yellow people, etc., etc. And that, you know, as opposed to starting off with race first.
So this being the Echo Chamber Club, we quite often like to recommend to our subscribers different articles, books, podcasts that they can then go to understand this point of view more, so that they're not kind of just listening to us or just listening to wherever. Where could someone go if they wanted to understand class instead of race more? What would you recommend that our subscribers read or listen to?
It's not necessarily the best, but this debate is happening on a podcast called About Race, which is produced by Slate, and they have it's an American podcast, and the latest edition talks about the Echo Chamber, and it says, you know, I don't want to burst your bubble, and the bubble being the bubble that you live in, hence you live in an echo chamber. And it's just an extremely good conversation, a very honest conversation. And the two black people on the panel, and there's a couple of black people, Hispanic, white, etc., who are there every fortnight when they do this, talk about actually how they are at the juxtaposition of being part of the liberal elite, but then also blacks have a foot in both camps, but how they get misinterpreted by both of those kind of constituent people. So the one guy says, so I can talk about politics and I'm, you know, somewhat erudite, and every now and then somebody who is white and American will say, oh, you speak so well, not knowing that actually I did go to Harvard, etc., blah, 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 you know, they're inherent prejudice. But he says, you know, the first time I had sushi, it kind of, you know, screwed with my brain, because, you know, in my culture, you cook fish and you cook it to death. Now, being West Indian, I in the UK, I completely kind of understand that. So the podcast Conversations About Race, but it's actually shortened to About Race, is a very good one. Somebody who I really do admire is Amina Lone, who I did interview for Mid-Atlantic just after Brexit. She ran to be the Labour Party MP, I think it was in Morecambe. Morecambe. And she failed in the last election by about 1,000 votes. If the swing to the Labour Party had been what the opinion polls had said it was going to be, she'd be an MP right now. Amina is, she's a Brummie. she's definitely working class in the old fashioned sense of it. She was brought up in a Muslim household. She's a single mother of four. In lots of ways, I'd say she's the poster girl of the left. You know, us lefties, we go, there you go, single mother of four, she can run to become an MP, and she's an ethnic, she's a Muslim, etc. She's a very captivating, interesting speaker when talking about castigating people that voted out as all racists. She says, no, they're not. And just because they talk about immigration doesn't mean that they are racists. And it coming from her, I think, is actually very powerful. So I'd say somebody like Amina Lone, and she might not actually stand again in the next election, though she's very active in Manchester city politics, and she's a big councillor there, etc. I think she's a very interesting speaker.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much, Royfield, for speaking with us today. And hopefully we'll have you back again soon.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks so much to Royfield Brown for taking the time to speak to the Echo Chamber Club podcast about his political values and views, particularly when it comes to grammar schools and social mobility, and also just the idea that the class system that we have in place at the moment when it comes to a description of class just is outdated. So if we can start talking about what a new class descriptor could look like, then perhaps we can start to encourage more social mobility. That was the last podcast of this little small run that we've done to introduce the Echo Chamber podcast. We're hoping to release about two or three of these a month. So if you or anyone you know you would be interested in being interviewed, talking about values, then do get in touch. My email is editor@echochamber.club. Happy New Year!